last week, it may have come to your attention about an act that was trying, that they were trying to pass through in the United States of America, SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act. Now, it was successfully stopped through People Power, people putting up and protesting against it. I think mainly in due to the fact that some of the online companies got themselves together and started a protest against it. So, for example, on the day it was stopped, Wikipedia was offline, were closed in English for that day. There was further, I think Google were planning a day of closure, others, Bing were planning a day of closure, others were planning a day offline as well, but it didn't ever come to that. What I thought would be an idea, if you were not aware of it, because nothing surer is going to come back in some other guise, would be to get somebody in who could talk us through what it was all about. And good morning and welcome to Michael Senker. Michael, how you doing?
I'm fine, how are you, Steve?
Sorry, try that now. Put the wrong mic on there.
I'm fine, how are you, Steve?
Much better, thank you. That's good. Right, Michael, first of all, your background was in video rental back in the UK, wasn't it?
Yeah, I started in video rental in 1979.
Wow, right back at the very beginning.
Yep. And, of course, the strange thing was, it was piracy, but it wasn't piracy because there were no intellectual copyright laws about then, and the film companies weren't really aware of the strength that video would be. So, for instance, my first film that I ever got hold of was a film called Rocky. And Rocky came out in 1976... I got hold of it in 1979, a copy. I had a video machine, as a lot of people did, but didn't really know what to do with it. And I got hold of a film, and I watched it. And, of course, the interesting thing was that people don't understand is that there was probably only three TV stations then.
That's right.
There was no Sky, there was no satellite, there was no pay-per-view, there was no computers, home computers. And the period between a film coming out in the cinema and going to television was 7 years. Okay, so you have this situation where a film comes out in 76, like Rocky, which everybody enjoys, and then I got hold of a copy of it. I watched it, I lent it to another friend of mine, and 4 weeks later I got it back and thought to myself, this could be a business. So I went and found 20 copies of other films, put them in a briefcase, went round to some friends and said, look, this is the new business. Three nights for £3. I'll be here Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And then moved on from a briefcase to a suitcase. You know? And then in 1981, I opened up my first shop in Hampstead. And then carried on till 2000, when I finally sold out a few more.
Now, all through that period, you were having problems with the film companies with regards to copyright, which is what this act was all about. I mean, I think it's, at this stage it's important just to run through what they were trying to do with the act. What was the SOPA Act all about?
Well, it goes back to the intellectual... The film companies have always owned the intellectual copyright to their product. So even when we used to buy a movie or a film, a hard video copy, it would never be ours. We weren't allowed, really. We only had a license to either rent it or sell it. And what they're trying to do now is they're saying that the downloading of movies or music is going to put everybody out of business. But unfortunately, this is a monster that they have created. Because they've always wanted to own their own copyright and not allow anybody to own it, they've always tried to find ways of stopping us from earning money. And I say us, it was the video stores.
Well, I remember the exact same conversation back in the early 80s, or the exact same headlines back in the 80s. These video rentals, and it's going to close down the cinemas, it's going to close down the movie business, people are going to stop going to cinema, blah, blah, blah.
Well, Jack Valenti in 1982, who was the president of the Motion Picture Association of America, actually said that VCR was the equivalent to allowing the Boston Strangler into the home of your wife when you're not there. That's how he said it was absolutely going to kill the business. And in fact, about 5 or 6 years later, I saw him in Las Vegas, where he was doing a conference to the video association over there, where there were 4,000 of us, 4,000 video dealers sitting there. And he said it was the best battle that he had ever lost, because he took it to Congress and they lost. But it turned out by that time, video was 57% of a movie's income. And it got to the stage where the film companies, Warner Brothers, Columbia TriStar, and we used to, because we were the fourth largest company in the UK, they used to treat us really well. They didn't like us, but they used to treat us really well. They would consult with us what kind of amount of copies of a video we would buy before they even put a film into production. And of course that includes Blockbuster, who had 7,000 stores worldwide. But they always wanted control. That was the thing. If the movie studios always wanted control of the product, and it got to the stage where they were producing a film that we could, on a DVD, let's go on to DVD, where we could buy it for £50, and Woolworths or a supermarket could buy it for £10. And they controlled it so much that they would not allow us to sell the £50 copy, and they would not allow us to rent the £10 copy. And worse than that, they even got to a stage where they issued films where they said we couldn't rent them at all. And that's what caused the demise of the video store.
But on those videos, going back to, and also on the DVDs now, I guess, they gave you a different copy to the one that was available from Woolworths that you touched on there, because your one would be loaded with trailers at the start of it.
Well, what would happen? Well, this was
for forthcoming films.
Yes, but this is something that we actually tried. We tried to do this. We tried to get a what we called a vanilla copy, so that we could get a copy that didn't have all the whistles and bells on it, which just had the film, the trailers. But what they also did is the one in Woolworths was absolutely identical in the end. It had exactly the same trailers, all the forthcoming, because what they were saying is, well, you'll better buy this film soon, you'll better buy that film, and also up and coming what's coming into the cinema.
So what was to stop you going to your local retailer and buying a whole batch of films rather than buying them off the video companies?
Now we're coming back to the whole crux of the issue, the intellectual copyright. Let's call it Warner Brothers, because I used to have murders with them. They own the intellectual copyright, and they would actually put an injunction on you. They would take you to court and fine you. I mean, massive fines. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of fines from breaching copyright. You just could not buy it. It actually had it written across it. This is not for resale, and the sale copy had this is not for rental. And it was an identical box, identical film.
Okay, so we're now in a situation where things have moved on. The video shop has demised, really. It's kind of, you still get the odd one, but it's kind of not what it used to be. And now everything's been moving on to the internet, and you can download movies off the internet, and the site's been set up where you can download music, videos, whatever you may choose. You pick, you download the latest movies. I mean, I've watched some of the latest movies from some of these sites. So we've moved on to that, and that's where the film companies are coming in and saying, I'm sorry, that's ours, you can't do it. What's wrong with that in principle?
Absolutely nothing. And I think the average person, if I was to turn around and say to you, if you want to download this perfect copy, you're not going to get any creepy crawlers in your computer, you know, you're not going to get the bugs, you're not going to get any malicious software going in there, you would pay maybe €1 or €2 or €3 to buy a movie.
Quite happily.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what's happening is we're being pushed to the Apple store, okay, where we're still being asked to pay 10, 12, 15 euros to download a movie that you're going to watch once. See, the whole thing with the movies and VCRs and everything, the video recorder was an evolution. Or sorry, it was a revolution. Everything from there is evolution.
Let's just play devil's advocate for a second. I make a product which is exclusive to me. Nobody else has it. I then have the right to be able to say, well, actually, do you know what, Michael, I want you to sell this, Michael, but I don't want you over there, David, to sell this product. I just want you. You will be my sole agent selling it. What's wrong with that? That's in effect all they're doing.
Well, no, they're not. What they're saying is that they want you to do everything on their terms. And the whole problem with the film companies was they were watching what we were earning. In other words, they were really concerned that we couldn't buy a £10 film for £10. We had to pay £50 for it because they considered, because we were getting £3 a night, we would possibly be earning more out of the movie than they were. They forgot that every penny that, obviously we accept wages, every penny that we got back into our business, we reinvested into films and into new stores. You know, we started with one store and finished up selling over 100. Well, I have to earn some money to do that. But you're correct. They can say it, but they've got to make it. If they don't, they're making it price prohibitive. Why? A lot of people don't want to have to go to app. When I download stuff onto my iPhone or onto my computer, and I'm not allowed to then move it to another telephone or move it to another computer, it's so complicated. And then out on the internet, which has been created, is a way of going, well, I'll download that. It's simple. But I would pay. I'd love to pay.
Yeah, if you... Okay. From my point of view, I'll tell you what I think. I personally think there's a little bit of short-sightedness going on here with them, because they could be using, as you've got a bit of information that actually clearly says that they are using YouTube to leak things on, they could be using these sites as a fantastic marketing tool.
Viacom is one of the biggest uploaders onto YouTube. They leak.
And just for the listeners, who are Viacom?
Viacom, well, I don't know who they are now. They used to be Paramount Pictures, yeah. and they own a lot of the TV shows, okay. and obviously they're big... movie company. These things change overnight, who owns who and who runs who. But what they do is they've got a whole staff that upload clips and spoilers and little bits and pieces onto YouTube. Right, it's you can look it up on Google. You can, yeah. And this, of course, is one of the things which they would probably try and stop once this SOPA law comes in, because it's not going to just be the control of downloading movies. Everything's going to get.
That's the key, and this is
just
what...
If it was just for movies or music, then perhaps you could turn around and say, okay. Look, what we used to do, I used to belong to an association. I was a chairman of the association. We used to go and have meetings and say, look, isn't there a way that we can work together so we can do things together? And they would never, ever allow us any control over their product. And it was always their product. But going back to what I was saying, if you go onto YouTube and look at a lot of these clips, and these clips are actually made to look a little bit rough, as though they've been pirated, which they haven't. They've actually come out of Viacom offices. And... There is an article which says that someone from Viacom gets onto Google and says to them, look, I'm ever so sorry, you've got to get this stuff off. It's like, you know, this is pirated stuff. And then someone else in the office goes, shh, don't say anything, we put it on there.
Okay. What I found particularly astounding is the lengths that they seem to be going to here. I mean, we're talking about, from the United States, them placing extradition laws on individuals who have a pirate site for downloading things. Extraditing people because they've downloaded a movie, or they've set up a site that enables people to download a movie or download a piece of music. I mean, is that not going over the top just a little bit?
Well, look, if it's a 17-year-old kid who's a 19-year-old kid in his home who's a geek and he's done this, yes, it's sure. But there is also a massive market out there in piracy and in the DVDs that you see, you know, being downloaded and buying in the streets, and it does hurt the industry. I mean, it killed the video shop, but there has to be a happy medium where I don't have to pay £9 to the Apple store to have something which I can't do anything else with except watch it on my computer.
Okay, well, last week it was stopped because of the campaigns that I touched on in the beginning. It's been stopped for now. What we're going to do is we're going to go to a break, and then we'll come back with another guest on the telephone line, who's an investigative reporter, and he's quite up on all this as well. He's going to give his views and the benefits of why of people powered and how it managed to get stopped. And I'd like you to stay here. with me, and we can join in the conversation with Tony as well.
Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Right, we're joined in the studio by Michael Senker, and we're talking about the SOPA Act that they tried to push through an American law last week, and the implications of that and what the history of it was. We're now going to go over to the UK. Michael's still with me in the studio, but we're now going to go over to the UK and speak to investigative journalist Tony Gosling. Good morning, Tony. How are you doing this morning?
Morning, yes, fine.
Good to have you with us. Now, Tony, we were just touching on with Michael there, the background to the whole copyright issue and the issues that he had with the movie companies when he had his video chains back in the UK. It's the movie companies that seemed, and the music companies seemed to be behind this SOPA Act, but there was much wider implications, wasn't there?
Well, there were, and, one of the things that I've been pointing out when people have asked me about this is that, there are existing laws around to stop this kind of thing if people like these big media companies choose to use them. The example being, I'm not sure if people have heard of it, but this story last Thursday of Dawn raids right across the world of those people involved in the Mega Upload website. This is a file-sharing website which actually does do file sharing rather than the SOPA Act, which actually is trying to take out people who even link to file sharing websites. And there were, I think it, I'm right in saying, either 5 or 6 Dawn raids in countries as far flung as New Zealand, using the laws that were introduced after 9/11, arrest terrorists, arresting people who are involved in this Mega Upload website. So the fact is, we don't need any kind of new legislation. It's already incredibly draconian. I mean, I would also say, and when I was working for the BBC, I had quite a lot of copyright disputes with them. I mean, this is just as a freelancer. I mean, basically the deal being that if you're working as staff for one of these big media corporations, you relinquish your copyright and everything that you do for them is their copyright. But whereas a freelancer, you're just being employed on a day-to-day basis, it's your own personal copyright. That's how it generally works. Unless you sign a special deal otherwise. So, ultimately, what's happening here is as we get bigger and bigger media companies, I mean, they really are becoming very, very powerful as they start buying up things like book companies, like Rupert Murdoch, 10, 12 years ago bought up HarperCollins. Some of the biggest book companies are now owned by the same people who own the biggest TV stations, the biggest radio news networks, and the biggest newspaper networks. We're finding that the idea that things can just wander around and be independent of them, they don't seem to like it. And this is one of the things I also find is incredibly useful for research. When you're digging into, very important stories, maybe obscure to some people, but, you need access to some of these more obscure little documentaries, articles and things. And the Murdoch way, the big media way, is to try and cut access from ordinary people and journalists like myself off to this material. I'm really annoyed about the whole Stop Online Piracy Act, because there's just been so many lies told about the necessity for it. I mean, I'm against piracy myself. I mean, I own quite a lot of material out there on the internet, and I will give a license for people to use it if they're going to pay. And if they don't want to use it, then I can either threaten to sue them, go through lawyers, or else actually sue them and get them, force them to take stuff down. We do not need any kind of more laws out there, particularly ones making this an international criminal stroke terrorist offence to link to this material. And it's what it's doing is it's actually aimed at the heart of what is best about the internet, which is the fact that people are able to have access to material that they might otherwise not be able to have access to, not necessarily to go out selling it. I mean, of course, that's wrong. But, people need to... what's happening is the internet is really expanding people's knowledge massively, and this is aimed at stopping that.
OK, Michael, is there anything you want to bring at this point?
Hi, Tony. It's interesting that obviously there's two things here. I'm looking at it as a financial thing with the film studios, and I've had a war with them for years, and obviously not since I've sold out, but at war with them, with their control and the lies that they tell, and the way they twist things. I mean, I remember seeing a meeting with Warren Lieberfeld from Warner Brothers, who was complaining that in 1995 he was getting a smaller percentage of the movie income than he was in 1989. But what he was using was the percentages. He was getting 17% of a million in 89, and then by the time it came around to 95, he was getting 1% of a trillion. So, you know,
because the video companies had increased,
right. But their biggest thing is this intellectual copyright, which they insist they own. And you know, you're talking about Dawn Raids. This is to do with intellectual copyright. I mean, this is ludicrous. It's all about money.
Well, that's right. The other thing, of course, is that traditionally, in any kind of sensible world, this is a matter for the civil courts, where you would, basically just go to a civil court for a court order, the same way as you would say, for example, get an injunction. You will then, what's happening here is this is all escalating up to a level of criminal behaviour. I mean, they're basically saying that allowing sharing of some file which is of you should be able to prove also that this is actually your copyright, because what's happening is this is a catch-all situation where you haven't actually necessarily proved that the person is breaking a copyright. What they're doing is they're escalating that right up to, you know, where I'm not absolutely serious here when I say it is like the Men in Black knocking on your door from the US in, like I say, five or six different countries around the world. And, you know, this it may not even be illegal in that country, but the terrorist type legislation implies that this person is, a serious criminal. I think, you know, this is really quite frightening and draconian. But, of course, at the end of the day, what's going on here is that there is a kind of media is seen now as the absolute sort of guru. In fact, it even trumps government in a lot of ways, and it trumps the justice system. Because if you go and have a look at what happened in the run-up to the war in Iraq, if you also have a look at the criminal activity of Rupert Murdoch and his organisation in phone hacking at the News of the World, and possibly The Sun as well, certainly the guy who was at the heart of Downing Street, Andy Coulson, certainly looks very much like the criminal mastermind at the News of the World behind this. You've got a lot of serious fingers pointing at Mr. Murdoch, but there haven't been charges, no charges. This is after about 5 years of the knowledge that this was going on. What there has been, though, is a media parade. What we've seen at the Leveson inquiry is literally day after day, more and more celebrities and well-known media people have been paraded in front of the cameras, and the public gets the impression that something's being done. Actually, nothing's really being done about either of these issues, whether it's the criminal behaviour of our top politicians in the run-up to the Iraq war, or criminal activity of people like the Murdochs in hacking into people's phones. The other thing to say about Leveson is that Leveson himself is a very close personal friend of the Murdochs, so he was completely the wrong person to choose to do an inquiry like this. I mean, he actually was in a deal with Matthew Freud, who's married to Elizabeth Murdoch, to do a load of work for him for free. So, there is a very close personal relationship between the Murdochs and the Leveson. It looks very much to me, as a media person, maybe you might even say a bit media insider, as an alternative to justice, an alternative to the law. And the media people are seen as really the barons of today, you know, the old, you know, if you go back sort of hundreds of years to the Middle Ages, these guys like the Sheriff of Nottingham, who are seen to be totally lawless and just able to do what they want. That, I'm afraid, is what we're looking at now when we look at some of the big media corporations. And the trouble is, it's a race to the bottom. So we've seen standards falling right across the Western media, including the BBC, in a race for audiences and sensationalism, because, that's the way that the Murdoch empire really is probably, it's fair to say, is leading the way down.
Okay, so Tony, what you're implying here is then that they have got bigger and bigger, the media companies are getting bigger and bigger, and they're putting pressure on government and whatever law enforcement agencies they may be to come down so hard on individuals that it's just completely way out of proportion.
Totally. totally out of proportion. Yeah, I mean, you're
hold on, Tony. Hold on, Tony. Michael.
I mean, to quantify what you're saying is very simply just put a DVD on just to watch a movie, and the first thing that comes up is an FBI warning. I mean, the first thing you see on a DVD is the FBI warning you not to make a copy of it. I mean, for God's sake, you know, I'm sure there's more important things for the FBI to be looking at than worrying about whether I'm going to make a copy of the DVD. And also, one of the big things is when you buy one of these DVDs, or it used to be a video, they used to break, or they'd get scratched, or they're broken. You know, you could... The argument was, well, I've bought a copy. I've bought the copyright to have a copy of this movie. Can I have another one, please? And they say, yes, you can. Give me £50 or $50, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And what we'd say, well, no, but I can make a copy of it. I can make a perfect copy of it from the DVD, you know, by the fact that you don't put Macrovision on it, which you could do. If you put Macrovision on it, yeah, you couldn't copy it anyway. But... can I make a copy of it? No, you've got to buy another one. But I say, but I've paid for my use of this.
Okay, so it strikes me here, Tony, there's two things going on. We have the movie companies or the media companies, whatever you want to categorise them as, looking for ultimate control and making as much money as possible and controlling as much of that money as possible, where it's all going or coming from. But then there's a wider implication as well, which is why you had the likes of Wikipedia closing down for a day last week and Congress being inundated, the switchboards inundated with people worldwide phoning to protest, and the act was stopped. Now, can you just talk through the wider implications of the act and why people were so up in arms and the online companies were so up in arms?
Well, the main reason was because this made it a criminal offence, an international terrorist-style criminal offence, to link to any website that does these file sharing. You know, that's the thing that I find so absolutely disgustingly offensive, and that is why the Wikipedia people decided that they were going to go on strike for a day, because, of course, they do lots and lots of links are what they do, to all sorts of other sites. There isn't really... You know, the individual internet user can decide whether they want to do something or not. But the idea of Wikipedia is that they will point you towards what there is out there to do. You know, they're basically a signposting site. So the idea is what they're doing here, the FBI, if you can imagine, have got a bunch of chainsaws, and they're going down and taking down all the signposts on the internet. No wonder people on Wikipedia were getting annoyed about it. But, I mean, as your guest was saying about the FBI thing that comes up at the start of the DVDs, maybe the FBI should be looking at some of the criminals within their own system, within Congress, within their own government, within their own security services, who've been responsible for all sorts of atrocities over the years, who seems are totally immune to prosecution. I mean, if you go to a website, for example, called whodidit.com, I think it's .com, it may be whodidit.com, you'll find a whole bunch of people who were very seriously implicated in the 9/11 attacks. That is to do with they were supposed to be following the 9/11.
I don't want to digress into that, Tony. I don't want to digress into that.
That's what I'm saying about the FBI. We don't want to be... We shouldn't be arresting our young creative entrepreneurs. What we should be doing is we should be, you know, looking at problems within our own Western governments and identifying those and, you know, doing something about those, because that's where the problem is. I think we've got a terrible problem of mismanagement, total lack of regulation, particularly, obviously, as everyone knows, in the banking system, in our Western governments, and that's where the problem lies.
So, okay, Michael,
back to the film thing. I mean, there's several things which we're crossing over on. First of all, we were talking about downloading movies and music and hurting the industry that way. Now, most of this stuff comes in, it's free. There's no big drug barons making millions out of it. It's geeks who are sharing, they're file sharing. Now, there's another system of piracy, which I am absolutely against piracy, I have to tell you, where you have the copies of the DVDs and everything, where it's a criminal organisation drugs, whatever it might be, getting fortunes, millions and millions and millions out of it. And I think that that is a different ball game altogether, where that should be stopped. Give me a way of downloading a movie at a sensible price, right? And I will pay for it. And also, you know, I don't want to be told that I can't put this on my laptop in my office, and I can't have it in my laptop in my lounge because Apple say that I can't do it. There's two things here. There's the piracy, and there's this
control.
And yeah. I think you've got to just keep the two things separate.
Separate. Any views on that, Tony? What Michael's just said there?
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely right. Of course, if you buy a film, then you should be able to watch it on your telly, on your laptop, or on your phone, or wherever you want to watch it. The other side to all this is, I mean, you know, the Blockbuster video chain over here in the UK, they have been incredibly predatory as well. I mean, this is a US-owned, I mean, you know, we've had an assault since World War II in Britain by Hollywood, by the US-owned distributors, by the US-owned cinemas. I mean, if you remember, I mean, I'm just about old enough to remember the old Rank cinemas and the Rank filmmakers here in Britain. That whole business was absolutely assaulted by the US during the 1960s and 70s, where we saw the Americans literally going around. The French would never allow this, right? They're going around buying up British cinemas and then failing to distribute British films, only using those British cinemas to distribute US films. And that eventually led to the collapse of many of our famous filmmaking companies and industries, like Rank, and like Hammer, for example. You remember them? I mean, they're fantastic filmmakers. And the strangulation of the British film industry. Now, you know, just as De Gaulle stood up to the Americans after the Second World War, you know, I wish that the British had stood up to the power of the American film industry, because in a way, this is a kind of Trojan horse. The idea is to sell you this kind of American dream. Now, if you go over to places like Detroit, you'll find that the American dream has completely withered on the vine. And I don't want, you know, to leave a legacy for our children's generation of just being sold this lie through the media. You know, I'd like also to see that our own culture in our own countries, right across Europe, is fairly reflected. I mean, even the director of the Cannes Film Festival last year was saying that something's got to be done to stop Hollywood just literally using its megabucks power to take over the English-speaking world's film distribution industry. So it's not just on the videos that we're seeing this. You know, we're seeing it also in our cinemas as well. We, lucky in Bristol, we have a little locally owned video rental business up near the university, which is called 20th Century Flicks, which is just a locally owned, and they have a fantastic selection of films. I always used to find I could never find the films I wanted to watch at Blockbuster. They would only sort of push the big American ones, and I'd be interested to hear what our friend there
Michael's desperate to come in.
Well, Blockbuster, I'll give you stories about Blockbuster. Blockbuster was started by a guy called Wayne Huizinga, and Wayne Huizinga started another company in America called Waste Management, right? I'm just going to mention Tony Soprano. They were in the waste management business, and then they started up in a company called Blockbuster, which obviously was the biggest company in America. They then came to the UK and wanted to make an instant impact in the UK. They had 7,000 stores worldwide at one time. And they came to the UK, and there was a big UK company called Ritz Video, which was owned by City Vision, a public company. And they instantly, without doing any real due diligence, bought the Ritz company.
To get a presence.
Just take over the whole market overnight. But what they, and in fact, they didn't even have the money to complete the deal. And if you go back into the archives and look at this, they finally had to go to Holland. I think that's where Philips' head office was, and had to borrow the money off of Philips, the electrical company, to buy the deal. Right, so they came to the UK and they bought the whole, I think it was about 1,000 stores of the Ritz chain, and instantly closed down 200 loss-making stores. Okay? and didn't have any clue what they were doing. But by that time, they were now being bought by Viacom, Paramount Pictures. So Blockbuster was actually owned at one time by
Paramount, the movie companies.
Yeah, by the movie companies.
Incredible.
I mean, I can tell you more stories. I mean, yeah. I actually did a deal with Blockbuster where I finished up buying. We actually had a 50-50 deal. I went to them and said to them, look, you've got these 200 stores, because they didn't realise in England, when you close a store down, you still have to pay the rent. So they had 200 stores. They were paying something like £4 million a year in rent in empty stores.
You see, the whole thing just strikes of hypocrisy through and through. Every time, the more I look at this, Tony, the more I just see double standards coming from the movie companies. Now, moving forward, what, you know, they're going to try and get this act back in again. You know, I was quite active, and other people like yourself were quite active in, you know, like tweeting last week and trying to put out the message to people, because it wasn't covered that well over here in the news agencies over here. You'd have been oblivious to it, really, or you could have walked about oblivious to what was going on, and then we wake up one day and we have all this control and all this censorship. What's the future? And how vigilant do we have to be here?
Well, I think, I mean, we've seen, for example, last weekend, I mean, I think there's basically an assault going on right now on the freedom of speech and our freedom to choose between different types of media. We saw last weekend Ofcom, which is the British regulator, taking away the broadcasting licence in Britain for Press TV, which is the Iranian channel. Now, right way through the Second World War, we didn't ever try to jam Lord Haw Haw and his Nazi broadcasts from Britain, because the sensible authorities here realised that actually, if they were to do that, if they were to jam Lord Haw Haw, then people would start thinking, well, maybe he's saying something that the British authorities don't want us to know, and so they didn't jam those signals. What we're doing now is totally the opposite of that. We are now actually blocking Press TV, and the reason that we're blocking the Iranian channel, supposedly, is because they've been doing some inaccurate reporting about drone strikes. Now, you just sit and think about the inaccurate reporting back in 2002 and 2003 over the Iraq war and weapons of mass destruction all over the place in Iraq. And you would imagine that under the same kind of standards, Ofcom would close down every single newspaper and every single broadcaster in Britain under those same standards. So what we're seeing is broadcasting being used as a weapon of war and as a political tool in order to inform or misinform or not inform whole populations on planet Earth. And we're seeing a different kind of consciousness in different parts of the world, based not simply on who is doing the broadcasting regulation, because when unpopular things are being said, as you know, you may agree, the Iranians have been saying things which aren't popular in Britain, what they're doing is they're simply finding some excuse to close them down. Now, you can still see Press TV on the internet, but you know, under these sort of more draconian laws, you may well see the Americans trying to close down Press TV's YouTube channel, for example, or or block their website. You know, so I think we're seeing now what's playing out is actually an information war. I mean, we've seen economic war going on at the moment. There's a similar kind of thing going on over in, you know, where they're trying to close down the oil supplies from Iran and seize their assets, this kind of thing, what they did with Libya, seizing massive assets. And we're seeing a kind of soft war going on, something that we're not really used to. It's not like the old Nazi Blitzkrieg, is it, where they come in with the tanks?
They
are actually closing down our consciousness, which is in a way actually much more sinister.
Okay, well, Tony, thank you for joining me this morning. Michael, just final word from yourself.
I mean, living in Spain, we actually have a lot of things that we can't do here. For instance, you know, we can't do a simple to buy films off or rent films off of Netflix. You can't do in Spain, right? To do it legitimately, to do a simple thing like the iPlayer, I can't
yeah, watch it. But there's even more pressure coming from the States to Spain on clamping down on even more things.
No, but what I'm saying is, so if they gave us everything that we would be happy to pay for, right, for instance, okay, 90, well, I don't know the percentage, I want to make it up like I do, but all percentages, let's say 80% of the Brits here have a satellite dish. Totally illegal.
Illegal, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, gents, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Can I just say one thing, Tony? Because I really had to laugh when I heard that the Blockbuster people were originally waste disposal people, because a very good friend of mine who's a researcher into the Italian mafia over in Italy, he's actually a Brit.
He lives
over in Italy. he said, if you ever want to find the mafia in your local area, go and find out who's got all the big public waste contracts.
Well, Tony, we can say, for once, you've learnt something from us this morning, so there you go, that's something you could go away with from this morning. Tony Gosling, thank you very much for joining me this morning. Michael Senka, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Thanks a lot, Jenny.
And I'm looking forward to the time when you can literally go onto the internet and download a film like you can download an MP3.
Cheers.
You know, for your iPod.
Okay, bye-bye.